Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. This week is the last real trading week of the year before the markets get quiet for 2 weeks. The big event this week is the Fed's FOMC meeting on Wednesday, December 18th, during which they are widely expected to cut rates again. So joining us today for the final CIO strategy snapshot conversation of 2024, glad to welcome back Jason Draho, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, we've made it another year, so thank you for joining us this morning to kick off another trading week. Looking forward to our conversation.
Good morning, Dad. Happy Monday and happy holidays.
So, Jason, there's a lot to get to before we begin to wind down 2024. Let's, though, first begin by reflecting on last week's inflation data. Any notable takeaways from the prints?
Well, the inflation data was the last real significant potentially market moving economic data we're going to get before the end of the year. And for the CPI data for November, it came in right in line with expectations. If you look at it on a month-over-month basis, both headline and core, the consensus view is coming around 0.3%. And that's kind of exactly where they came in, within a couple of basis points of what the forecasts were. So bang in line with the expectations. So it ended up being not necessarily kind of market moving, just because it was, as expected. There were certain concerns that, with inflation, anytime you get the data, could be a little on the hot side, and that could alter what the Fed would do and add a little bit of uncertainty going into the FOMC meeting. But it came in sort of in line with expectations. When you actually look at the details, there was, it's sort of again mixed story. I think on net, what it did is sort of reinforce the overall view that there's a disinflation trend, even if the month-over-month didn't provide much improvement versus the prior month. The most notable thing is that the rent, the OER component of inflation, the shelter inflation more broadly, which is over a third of the index, so it's quite significant, that actually fell quite a bit, or at least relative to prior months. It still rose, but it rose at around 0.2% month-over-month. For context, we go back a year, 2 years ago, this was running up 0.6, 0.7 on a month-for-month basis. So after the surge in home prices, also surge in rent going back a few years ago, now we're starting to finally see some normalization of that shelter piece of inflation comparable to sort of pre-pandemic trends. This is critical because if you get that, that is a big part of having disinflation continue. There were also some upside surprises, particularly hand-in core goods. There were some surprises down on the upside. But some of those data points you could sort of attribute to more, kind of one-off, not necessarily a sign of sustained increases, because some of those data points can be, choppy and volatile on a month-per-month basis, whereas the shelter piece has more of a slower-moving kind of new trend. So the fact that it's dropping is more positive than the sort of, hot parts of the core inflation. So again, overall, in line with expectations, not necessarily market-moving, consistent with the disinflation trend, at least for another month. So, relatively good report when you kind of look into that perspective.
So, Jason, as our listeners know, the Fed has been closely monitoring inflation data throughout the course of 2024. Now, if a rate cut is highly likely at this upcoming meeting, then what exactly are you watching for?
Well, just putting some numbers on this highly likely, the market right now is pricing about a 97% probability that the Fed cuts on Wednesday. So it really would be shocking if they didn't do that. The market's also pricing only two additional cuts for next year through the end of December, which is suggesting that the Fed is does cuts this time and then takes a much more gradual approach to how they cut rates next year. It'd be very surprising then if the Fed didn't cut. So the focus really would be on what is their guidance for next year. The current dot plot that was last updated in September implied four 25 basis point rate cuts next year. That is likely to fall. So the median dot might indicate more like three cuts next year. That'd still be higher than the market pricing of only two cuts. There is certainly a range of views of what does the Fed do, beyond cutting this Wednesday. I think there's a pretty uniform agreement among committee members back in September that rates were too high, they were restrictive. The labor market in particular was cooling. They need to start cutting and getting back to something that is closer to a neutral level of policy. Where that neutral level is ultimately is an unknowable. You're only going to know it as you sort of experience it. Given that inflation is still above the 2% target, you know, it's reasonable to expect that there'll be some committee members who are more cautious and will like to see a much more gradual pace of rate cuts to actually see inflation continue to come lower rather than risk inflation reaccelerate and the Fed having to not only stop cuts, but even potentially pivot towards a rate hike. So I think that we'll see something that would be along the lines of perhaps a hawkish cut, meaning the Fed cuts, but Powell in particular in this press conference might imply that, you know, they'll watch closely, you know, and need additional evidence for inflation to come down for them to want to cut. At the same time, he'll probably try to guide the markets towards skipping the end of January meeting where they wouldn't cut then, not being so committed to doing like a quarterly pace, which is, you know, what the market is more expecting. They've moved to something closer to quarterly or even like, you know, once every half, leaving the door open, being very data dependent, but also suggesting a more gradual pace of normalization from here. So words of language along that front, that's what I would expect. And that's really what the market's going to interpret. But given the market's already pricing for only two additional cuts after Wednesday, it would take quite a lot for the Fed to kind of be more hawkish than the markets. At the same time, they don't want to come across as too dovish because then that would fuel concerns that the Fed is being a little bit oblivious to inflation, you know, perhaps being very gradual in how it comes down. Assuming Powell threads, I think that's not necessarily really narrow kind of needle, but you know, threads it, and the markets will kind of breathe a sigh of relief. And then it really turns into what data we can issue and also what policies we would get from the Trump administration. But that is all a story for 2025.
Okay, well, Jason, thank you for previewing the FOMC meeting. We will see what the Fed delivers within a couple of days' time. Pivoting a bit, now that we're at year end, there is, of course, out there a lot of best of lists as well as year in review articles. In your fourth annual Word of the Year blog, you give your choice for the 2024 finance Word of the Year. So what is the word and how did you land on it?
Well, I define the kind of the Word of the Year for financial markets as being the word that sort of kind of dominated the overall narrative debates in the markets, sort of, you know, the what sort of drove, you know, the dynamics. It isn't necessarily the exact description of, you know, what happened, you know, per se. So when I think of, you know, the word of the year this time, 12 months ago, I suggested the word would be put, as in Fed put. My rationale then was that, you know, the main debate in the markets this year would likely be, you know, when and by how much the Fed would cut rates. And would they do so preemptively if growth kind of held up? And it's certainly true that the investor focus on Fed rate cuts has been, you could say, as influential in the markets as any factor this year. And when the Fed cut 50 basis points in September, it was effectively exercising its put on the market because it was concerned with labor market cooling and the economy slowing and it didn't want things to get any worse. Yet we think of the word put hasn't really been used extensively in market discussion. It's been, I'd say, lurking in the background, but it isn't kind of constantly discussed as like, well, the Fed exercises put, the Fed put it there. It's sort of in the background, but not necessarily front and center. So I think there are better options to describe in one single word, like what is the most quintessential kind of theme for the year, you know, landing, whether it's, you know, prefaced by soft landing or no landing, is a constant preference and or constant presence talking about the state of the economy. But we've been saying this for the last 3 years, you know, when we get a soft landing, hard landing, it is now just sort of ingrained in sort of finance lexicon. You know, so I would sort of almost leave that as a side. It's just the way we talk about the economy. So instead, you know, my kind of view is that the word that maybe best captures the dominant market theme in 2024 is exceptionalism. And by that, I mean like sort of U.S. exceptionalism. That is clearly evident if you look at equity market performance. The S&P 500 is up 27% year to date. The Mag 7 are up just a little over 50%. Investors have been using the term to describe the U.S. economy going back to Q1 when the U.S. was, you know, holding up quite well and the rest of the world, you know, not so much. Some of the use of that language and exceptionalism sort of died down during the summer when you saw signs of the U.S. economy maybe cooling a little bit, the labor market showing some sort of cracks. But since the election, you know, with Trump coming back and a sort of America First policy approach, but also the U.S. economy doing well, you know, and growth is tracking at over 3% for the fourth quarter. U.S. exceptionalism is back, I think, sort of with a vengeance in terms of a narrative. It is the clear consensus among investors globally that the U.S. exceptionalism in terms of growth, but also even maybe the equity market outlook, that is the story that we're going into next year. So I think if one word that maybe best symbolizes the performance of the economy and markets this year more than any other, I think exceptionalism is a good one.
Now, Jason, it's interesting. Within the blog, you also provide your prediction for the 2025 word of the year. So what word did you settle on there?
Well, the idea of the word is not necessarily a prediction of something happening. Like a couple of years ago, I suggested disinflation would be the dominant word. Not that necessarily disinflation would happen or how much it would happen, but just that investors focusing on it would be the key kind of market driver. So we think about next year, there's many kind of strong candidates and kind of coming right out of the gate. Anything that's related to the Trump and Trump administration, whether it's like Trump 2.0, tariffs, trade, immigration, these will all be front and center topics starting, well, already. They're kind of very prevalent, but certainly on January 20th after the inauguration. But I'd argue that something like Trump 2.0 is more of an umbrella term for all these different policies. And it's not so much the policies that really kind of matter for the markets. It's the consequences of the policies, whether they're good for growth, inflation, what does it mean for interest rates, things like that. That's sort of more market, relevant. So in that vein, I think there's other kind of candidates that kind of are influenced by the consequences of the policies rather than the policies themselves. So to me, like another really strong candidate could be vigilantes, as in sort of bond vigilantes. The U.S. deficit is over 6% of GDP, and if that's forecast to get those levels for the foreseeable future, the debt levels on a unsustainable trajectory, there will be a point when investors start demanding higher yields to entice them to buy this enormous supply of treasury bonds that's coming next year and in years to come. If they do that, if they want a higher term premium, they could easily push a 10-year treasury yield up to or even above 5%. And that would certainly fuel talk of, bond vigilantes, because it has such a big impact, higher interest rates on global financial markets, on the U.S. economy. If that were materialized, that would quickly become an overarching investment theme for next year. So I think vigilantes will be a very kind of prominent theme for, for next year. Another sort of strong candidate, again, sort of, kind of tied to the incumbent administration is the reacceleration, specifically pertaining to kind of U.S. growth and inflation. We've already discussed how, disinflation should continue, but many of the Trump 2.0 policies have an inflationary bias. They have a pro-growth agenda as well. But there's definitely this potential for reacceleration and inflation. And you don't even need to see inflation reaccelerate or rise for investors to worry about it. Just if disinflation stalls and growth is holding up, then reacceleration risk will sort of dominate market performance. So that's like another strong candidate. But ultimately, I would expect both vigilantes and reacceleration to fall short as the 2025 word of the year in financial markets, for a couple of main reasons. One is ultimately, I think, still that disinflation would still look likely to continue. I go back to my opening comments regarding, the shelter piece of inflation. That's a big chunk that looks like it's still headed lower. The labor market is cooling, so parts of services that are more labor sensitive, that should also kind of get a benefit there. But the path of disinflation, is likely to, be bumpy. And the second factor is that, while the Trump policies, if fully enacted as promised on the campaign trail, would be inflationary, ultimately, I think there is a Trump put, for treasuries, meaning that inflation was maybe the number one issue in the election. It was the number one reason or a major reason why Trump was reelected. So having policies that exacerbate inflation and lead to higher bond yields, that would be bad politically. So therefore, not wanting that to happen, there's sort of a Trump put on treasuries, keeping yields from rising too much. And the only way you do that is to avoid policies that are overly inflationary. So again, I think bond vigilantes may have another day in the future, but it's probably not next year, whether they're the main theme. And same thing with kind of reacceleration. So this just brings me to my kind of choice for next year, which is roaring, as in sort of roaring 20s. For those who are regular listeners to this podcast, they know this shouldn't come as a surprise. We also titled our year-end outlook as Roaring 20s Next Age. So really maybe the question more is like, why now? Like, why this year? Well, by many measures, the U.S. economy is roaring based on the criteria of how we've defined a roaring 20s regime. The S&P 500 total return for this decade, and now it's almost 5 years, is over 100%. So that's even more roaring. Yet despite all that, the use of roaring in financial markets has been somewhat fleeting. A lot of people have been very skeptical about it. It's been superseded by talk of U.S. exceptionalism, sort of no landing scenarios, even bubbles. So I think for next year, for this roaring 20s to be kind of the finance word of the year, it really has to become sort of a dominant narrative in the market. So I think there's a number of reasons why I think that could be the case. First is that the U.S. economy is likely to maintain these sort of roaring conditions. So just that status quo economically you know, is becoming more accepted. I think that leads into another point, which is that investors are increasingly embracing the idea that the economy, you know, has landed a sustainable 5% or higher nominal GDP growth rate. That's sort of consistent with how we've defined the Roaring Twenties regime. Another factor is that M&A and IPO activity that have been pretty quiet for a couple of years, they are poised to pick up, given lower rates, given strong growth, and also a regulatory environment that should be much more favorable. And when you see that pickup at sort of deal-making activity, that tends to be associated with kind of roaring markets, because it means investors and business owners and CEOs are more confident about their company, about the economy, about the markets. And that's sort of the fourth factor, that sentiment should continue to rise. You know, levels that are still relatively modest overall. There's some pockets of froth in the markets, but, there's definitely a long runway for that to go. And the final factor is that, and this is a key point of our whole Roaring 20 thesis, is that productivity gains are going to be strong, and they will get a bit of a benefit from AI. It's still very preliminary on that front, but it's likely to start showing up in some applications, especially by the end of next year, and that will fuel, a positive kind of productivity story for the rest of this decade. So I think all those things suggest that to me, by the end of next year, this roaring kind of, discourse will be much more common. It will probably start slow. Q1 will be dominated by Trump policies, maybe reacceleration fears, vigilantes, but those should sort of die down as market themes. And by Q4, if the macro plays out as they expect, as deal activity picks up, sentiment will improve. This time next year, we really could be talking about how everyone is talking about the Roaring Twenties. So we will see. But that is my prediction for the word of the year next year in financial markets.
So, Jason, as we now conclude our conversation, can you provide our listeners, our clients, with CIO's main investment recommendations going into 2025?
Well, you couldn't predict a Roaring Twenties or roaring for the word of the year for next year without also having a key message being that there's more to go in equity markets. The momentum into year end, the Santa Claus rally looks like that's, it's in place. There's certainly a lot of fears of a potential correction, given how strongly the market moved, and that is a risk in Q1 as the market digests these various, Trump policies, reacceleration concerns, things of that sort. But ultimately, 12 months from now, we think the fundamentals will support equities being higher than they are today. And not because of frothy conditions, not kind of getting excess, it's just good solid fundamentals would drive equities higher. Tying in with this AI sort of productivity theme, there's opportunities there. So sort of continue to seize the opportunity in AI. We've seen just recently in the past weeks, some of these AI stories and stocks, doing well, kind of resuming some of their leadership in the market. And we think that theme still has legs. And then following on the Fed cutting rates this week, we still think they're going to cut more, next week or next year. As that happens, thinking about to be in a position for lower rates, moving money out of cash or cash equivalents into other markets, other parts of the fixed income market. We think there's certainly a risk that treasury yields could go higher because of those vigilantes. But when you get treasury selling off, those will be opportunities to add exposure and add duration. Right now, we sort of target more of the 5-year point for duration. In an environment where things could also, inflation could be elevated, going for gold as a hedge in the portfolio is another asset class that we like. And gold and Roaring 20s somehow seem to kind of go together. So a lot of potential things to do for next year. But for now, we take a break as we head into the holidays and resume again next year.
Well, with that, Jason, do want to thank you very much for all of your insights, contributions, and guidance here on the CIO Strategy Snapshot throughout the course of 2024. I wish you and yours a happy and healthy holiday season, and do look forward to picking back up with our conversation in the year ahead.
Well, thank you, Dan, and I wish you and all of our listeners a happy holidays, happy new year, and have more success in 2025.
Thank you, Jason. I do want to point out to our listeners, our clients, that Jason and I will resume with the CIO Strategy Snapshot series on Monday, January 6th. In the meantime, for our listeners, our clients, you may locate Jason's blog, the 4th Annual Word of the Year blog, up on ubs.com/CIO. For clients of UBS, simply reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of Jason's blog directly. Wishing all of our listeners a happy holiday season and new year. I do appreciate your listenership throughout the course of 2024. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.